Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host, Rob May. I hope everyone's having a good week so far. Back off of my little vacation that I took, and I'm rested and very happy. I'm glad the weather decided to catch up with the Florida weather where I was. And, hey, it's beautiful out, and I hope everyone is enjoying. We've got some good plans going on for the weekend coming up with Memorial Day happening. Very excited to welcome back to the program tonight Dr. Linda Groff. Oh, Linda, welcome back to the show.
Hi, good to be back.
All right, well, Linda, this is part three of the extended series that we're doing with you, of a 12-part series. And, again, you know, it's been very interesting to have you on because, you know, in all sincerity, the topic of the future and different things that go into it and thoughts and the way that so many elements really work towards creating a future and influencing and affecting, and I think a lot of people overlook that, but you have really devoted a major portion of your life to this, right?
Yeah, I've been doing future studies for a long time, yeah, along with a couple other things. But, yeah, I find it, I love it. It's very interesting, yeah.
And now I want to say, before we get into today's topic, which is going to be part two of technology as a driving force for change, why don't you explain to people just a little bit about what it is, to what future studies is, and how you really got into it?
Oh, well, future studies is a very strange field where people come into it from all different backgrounds and disciplines, but the idea is to look not just at where we've been in the past, like history, and where we are now, but what kind of world do we want to create going forward? And people want to look at, you know, where are the trends taking us, and is it taking us where we want to go? And if not, how can we change where we're going? And how can we also come up and use our creativity and imagination to envision alternative futures that would be better, so we can put our energy and resources to create that future instead of just letting it unfold, you know, sort of without any direction on our part. So the idea is to really think a little more consciously, like, can we create a better world? What would that look like? What would be the components of it? Are we moving in that direction now, or are we going the opposite way? And, you know, how do we reverse direction to create something that's better, to give more people in life and opportunities to actualize themselves? That's a few things, yeah.
So, and how was it, I mean, with you, I mean, who was it that influenced you to do this?
You know, that's a really good question. And I started teaching my first year at University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada, some time ago, and it was a one-year job. But somehow or other, I created a futures course there, and I discovered the World Future Society as an organization that has conferences every year. And out of that, I started to really explore future studies as a field. And it's, as I said, very interdisciplinary, and people come from all different backgrounds, which is very interesting. And I sort of really got into it, and I started going to annual conferences of the World Future Society and met lots of interesting people from different backgrounds, and, you know, started doing presentations every year for many years now. And I find the whole field very fascinating, because it's looking at technology, it's looking at environmental issues, it's looking at cultural diversity issues, how do we come together, it's looking at consciousness issues, all kinds of things. So futures don't limit themselves. They can look at, you know, and they tend to be more whole system thinkers, you know, that how do things interrelate and change over time, not just looking at one little narrow area by itself, which
sure,
is another
absolutely.
Difference. Yeah. Yeah, and some futures are also quite interested in consciousness, you know, so you can bring in spiritual consciousness issues for some people, not all futures, but some.
Right.
So it's quite open, and, you know, there's big debates, you know, is it a whole field, you know, what is the field, what does it include? It can really look at the future of anything and everything, so it's pretty potentially big area.
Now, so for tonight's episode, and again, I know it's a continuation of last week's topic of the technology as a driving force for change, what is it tonight that you'd like to kind of elaborate on with that?
Okay, well, last time which is on the website, I think we define science and technology and different views of technology, negative, positive, neutral, and we looked at technology driving change, especially through the agricultural, the industrial, and the information ages, and how new technologies also restructure all our institutions. But today, what I want to look at is some more far-out stuff. Because
okay.
I've done some work, and I'm going to look at some different technologies that are going to impact our future human evolution. So, these may sound more far out to people or more controversial, or they may be aware of this already happening, but there's a lot of change happening now with technology that are really raising huge possibilities, opportunities, but also some dangers and some ethical issues and all kinds of things that I wrote a long article on this if people want to get it. It's in a journal, future journal called World Future Review, published by SAGE, which is sagepub.org or com, I can't remember which. But, the issue was my article, and that was on 8 different technologies. But it was published summer, fall 2015 issue. But basically, there's a whole lot of questions that we need to be discussing today about technology and also other issues, which we'll talk about later in the series, like, environmental sustainability issues. I think we're going to do that one next time. But there's also cultural diversity questions, and there's also consciousness questions. But today, I'm just going to try to highlight some of these technologies today that are raising some, big questions and potentially a lot of change for people to have to deal with. So you want me to start talking about them?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Well, the first two, given I've got to watch my time because I could take a lot more than the time we have. But basically, I'm going to have to sort of do this fairly quickly. But there's I don't know how many people in the audience have heard of transhumanism, but there's this idea that humans might evolve beyond what currently human beings are. And
right.
There's a both infotech version of this by Ray Kurzweil as well as a biotech-based version. And so I was going to go through those quickly first and then look at robotics as well as artificial intelligence, which will also have a big impact on our future and are raising very important questions and issues, and then maybe a little on cyborgs if we have time. And then there's also genetic issues, DNA and genetic engineering questions and possibilities of even creating, huge ethical questions about designer babies and stuff. And then the internet, where is that going in the future as another technology? And then maybe some about space technologies. So there's quite a bit to cover in a very short time here. So I guess I could just raise a few of some of the, my own view is that we need to have much more public discussion and dialogue and education on these issues because they will
right.
be impacting our human future. And there needs to be more dialogue, not just between different technologies, but between people who advocate, taking care of the earth and people who are concerned about how we bring the diversity of cultures together and how we can evolve our consciousness to be more interdependent thinkers, to experience reality that way so that we can have a better chance to solve our problems. So all these
sure.
are important, but technology also is raising big issues. So that's, should I go ahead and get started on some of these?
Absolutely, yeah. We only have 20 minutes already.
I know, so where did the time go? So the first, transhumanism is a movement within a certain group of people who are futurists, but they sort of have their own group called transhumanists, and there's different versions of it, but the idea is that humans can evolve beyond what we just have been up to this point. And one version of this that's gotten a lot of publicity is Ray Kurzweil at MIT. He's now also chief, technology or some kind of officer at Google, but he's a very brilliant person. He has this view that in the future, we're going to upload our consciousness into a computer chip as a way to achieve immortality. So this is already quite, going to be kind of shocking to some people to hear. But and I have some issues with his views, which I'll get into in a second. But his view is based on the idea that humans have a brain that's a biological brain that operates at a certain calculation, speed, and capacity. And that now with the rise of computers and everything, at some point the calculation speed and capacity of the computer to operate is going to surpass that of the human biological brain. And as that happens, which I think he says is around 2045, humans will start to become obsolete, and in order to achieve immortality, we will want to upload our consciousness into a computer chip. So that's a very quick overview of his idea. The problems that I have with it are, number one, what is he really uploading into a computer chip? And is that really the future that any of us really want? You know, some people maybe, but not everybody. So this gets into very interesting questions even about what is consciousness and what is our mind, you know. And these are questions we've debated, I think, since the beginning of humanity. Like, how is it that, you know, you and I are right now talking and conscious of the fact that we're talking to each other, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and where does that consciousness come from? And is it based, you know, this is a big issue right now in science and in literature, is like, is consciousness just a product of the physical brain or more than that? And if you come from a more spiritual perspective, you would say it's more than that, because when you're born, some consciousness comes in, and when you die, some consciousness leaves your body, you know, and that there is some kind of life after death in the sense of some consciousness surviving. So this is a huge debate in itself, and if you have a materialistic worldview only, this is what's interesting, is then you know, what I found fascinating, people who are interested in consciousness as well as transhumanists, they all would like to have a sense of immortality. You know, one of the things about being human is that we know we're going to die someday. And then this propels us to do some things, I think, in our lives, to try to leave something behind us. You know, something that shows that we were here and we had some impact, we did something to, you know, make the world a better place or something like that.
Sure.
So, you know, it's not clear that any other animal species has that awareness that humans have, but it does propel us to, you know, I think to act and try to be creative and leave, you know, if you have a family, that's a way of leaving something behind. And if you have good ideas, if you do something in the world that's, you know, has a positive impact to help other people, whatever, then you have some, that, you know, that's a form of creating some immortality, I suppose, for yourself. But now, because of new technologies, people are talking about, well, maybe we could, you know, actually just sail around on this physical plane forever. You know, so this is really Kurzweil's idea. And he takes a bunch of vitamins every day and so on, so he will live to the point when this will be possible, in his view. My question is, though, is that I think humans are more complex than uploading on whatever. You know, he's trying to map the human brain, which would then, in his view, be also the mind, and be able to then upload that into a computer chip. But to me, humans have at least three types of thinking. We have either-or thinking, which is digital, like at the basis of a lot of computer work, you know, zero or one. We have both-and thinking, which is necessary for any kind of whole system thinking. You take things that are originally not connected, and you see that they actually are connected within a bigger system. And that's really important in terms of interdependent thinking today to solve many problems. And then there's a third kind, which is neti-neti, or neither nor, which if you talk about something like God, quote unquote, you know, you can't define it in human words, because then you limit it to something that's unlimited. So that's kind of an Eastern concept, I think, of the spiritual realm being beyond anything you can put in words. And then in addition, humans have emotions, and there's big debates with you know, well, I get to that with robots, too, whether they actually feel or not and have emotions. And then we have ethics and so on. And then, you know, if you have some sense we have some spiritual part of who we are as well, then all those make us more complex to me than just uploading your consciousness in a computer chip. But that's my, you know, my little critique there. And there's a second type of transhumanism, which is, I would say, more biotech-based. And this is a view of somebody named Gregory Stock and Ramiz Naim and other people. And their view is that in the future, we do want to, you know, live much longer, or eventually maybe forever. But the idea is that we want to keep our body. You know, with Ray Kurzweil's idea, you won't have a body anymore. You're just going to have a mind and a computer chip. And somehow that's going to replicate who you were. I mean, to me, it sounds very confining. it's not my cup of tea. But anyway. But the biotech-based version is maybe a little more palatable, which is, you know, you want to keep your body, and then as parts wear out, you augment them and replace them. Like if you know, if they wear out or they get damaged or there's an accident or something, you can replace those. And so, you know, this way you can keep living much longer, but keep a body to get around in.
Sure.
And there's all kinds of issues about that, too, you know. And then And there's issues, can we actually replicate a human brain eventually? Because a human brain is the most complex organ we have, you know. So anyway, and there's, you know, under Obama, there is a whole brain initiative now. They are trying to map the human brain. But the real question, I mean, there's huge questions in all of this, which we don't have all the answers for. You know, we just have a lot of really amazing questions. And so let me go on to the next, which is robotics and artificial intelligence, because there's a huge issues there as well. And so if we get to robotics, you know, a robot can look like a human or, you know, body, but a robot has a computer for its brain, right? And then it can then do different things. And, you know, in Japan, they have robots just on the factory assembly line doing everything. And they are probably, they're into robots even more than we are, and they have a different view culturally. They don't see robots as a possible threat. Humans and people in the West have a little more mixed views on it. But anyway, with robotics, there's different science fiction stories. There's tons of examples of robotics in science fiction. And I don't know how many people in the audience used to watch Star Trek, but you know, like Data.
I'm sure. I'm sure there's a decent
character.
Amount.
Yeah, on Star Trek, who, you know, was part of the crew, and there was a great episode in his case where Starfleet Command wanted to decommission him and study him, and then Captain Picard had to defend his right to keep living because he had become a quote-unquote sentient human being, meaning self-aware being, even though he was an android, you know, like a humanoid type of a robot and so on, and part of the crew. But once you become sentient, this is the big debate today, is whether technology can wake up, you know, and become self-aware. There was another recent film that a lot of people looked at, Ex Machina, I don't ever say it right, Machina, M-A-C-H-I-N-A, Ex Machina, did you ever see that? Anyway.
No.
It was very quite fascinating, interesting film, but it raises the question about, you know, if a robot with a brain made up of a computer brain, and that brain, like a la Kurzweil and people, can become more and more self-aware and start making its own connections that go beyond its original programming by humans, right? Then eventually, is it going to just take off because it can operate at such faster speeds than our biological brain is the idea? That then, you know, eventually maybe robots could achieve super intelligence, you know, and if they could, would they then just look at us as sort of some inferior species, you know? But again, it goes back to what is consciousness based on and so on. Now, there's other interesting things with a robot. Can it, you know, robots can be programmed to appear to have emotions, but does it really have feelings like a human does, for example?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then can you program a robot to deal with ethical questions in gray areas where it's not just black or white, you know, which a lot of life is more complex like that. And so anyway, these are all interesting questions today that are being raised by all these things. And then another interesting thing is, well, Japan has opened a new hotel, I think in July 2015, I've got to check on it, in Nagasaki, called the Henna Hotel. It's supposed to be run by robots in Nagasaki, Japan.
Wow.
So, you know, they're going to greet you, carry your bags, clean your room, et cetera, is the idea. But I have to check on what's happened with that. But, you know, this is interesting. And then there's another thing about robots, you know, if they look too much like humans, would we be uncomfortable, you know? Some people think we should make sure that robots look like robots and not
robots.
Like humans. Yeah. But so these are some of the issues. And then if the military, here's another big issue with robots based on, you know, is like this is a huge issue whether robots for military purposes could become autonomous agents, meaning they can go beyond their programming and make decisions when they come into situations that aren't pre-programmed. But that raises all kinds of issues, you know, whether they could get out of control in a military situation.
Sure,
or not.
Yeah.
So, and then another issue with artificial intelligence, which is now, you know, that's called artificial intelligence, meaning it's computer-based intelligence. But again, it's a field looking at giving machines the ability to seem like they have human intelligence and making computers behave like humans, you know. So, you know, you can use artificial intelligence for games and expert systems, all kinds of stuff, but and to run a robot to, you know, as its brain. But so far, you know, there's a big, huge debate in the literature about how far along artificial intelligence is and when could it possibly, you know, will it aid our human future in evolution or will it become a threat to our existence? And the interesting thing about that is in 2014 or 15, Stephen Hawking, who's, you know, a famous physicist in England, and then Elon Musk, who we all know, who's got SpaceX and, you know, a Tesla car and everything, who's quite a brilliant guy, you know, they both warned about the danger of AI could be a threat to the future of humanity. And then Elon Musk started his funding research on smart artificial intelligence. And then in 2015, Bill Gates came along, and then who's head of, you know, used to be head of Microsoft, and Sir Martin Rees, who's a UK astronomer royal, and they both warned also about artificial intelligence becoming a danger if it becomes super intelligent, and, you know, in robots that could potentially be a threat to humans if they think they've surpassed human intelligence. But again, you know, you get back to what is human intelligence based on, and so on. And so this is like, you know, enormous issues. So let me see here. Another issue is cyborgs, you know, which is a human, partly biological, but also mechanical or electronic parts, so some mixture. And in the 70s, we had a $6 million man with Steve Austin, played by Lee Majors, and the Bionic Woman with Jamie Summers, played by Lindsay Wagner, about bionic humans, or basically with cyborgs where they had some augmented parts to them. And then in science fiction, you know, this is a little more far out, but, you know, if you look at the X-Men series, they talk about mutants who are born with special, some genetic different, you know, mutation that allows them to have superior powers to other humans. So that's a huge issue, you know, in all the X-Men movies and whether humans could accept them if they existed and so on. But anyway, and then Stan Lee, who has a TV program called Superhumans, where he's actually looking for not people who are just born with some natural ability to do something that most humans can't. So, you know, there are things, there are people being born with unusual abilities. So the next thing I want to get to, because there's a lot to kind of get through here, but we're moving right along, is genetic engineering. And there's huge things also, yeah, happening here. And so the question is about modifying our own genetic structure or our DNA in a cell for purposes of research or to manufacture animal proteins or correct the genetic defects. Like if a person has a disease that's caused by a genetic defect, right, could you go in and splice out the defect and then reinsert something that was correct, you know, so they wouldn't have that problem anymore. So this is another huge area today with potentials that are very positive as well as some dangers, and just like artificial intelligence. So on this one, if you, you know, we mapped the human genome, and then first, which was only 2% of all the genes were mapped in the human genome. You know, there's a public and private effort, but then there was like 98% of our DNA is junk DNA. And then later they've discovered that that could be important. So we, you know, we still, it's not enough just to know the genes. You have to know how the cell interacts with its environment and how people's thinking impacts their behavior, not just the physical cell itself, you know. So that's a new field called epigenetics that's happening. But now people are looking at, you know, how to look at the genome of other species as well as things like cloning, you know, making a copy like Dolly the sheep. You know, and then if you make a clone of a clone of a clone, is it like a Xerox of a Xerox of a Xerox? So every time you make a copy, it gets just a little weaker, you know. And then there's issues with stem cell research where you can get a very generalized cell that can develop into any kind of specialized cell. And that's raising ethical issues for some people about what cells to use for that. And then one of the really big issues that's now emerging is they have developed something called this CRISPR gene editing technique, where you can actually go in and edit the genes of some member of a species. Like, again, if you had a genetic disorder, right, and a problem because of that, that might be good. But what's happened now is there's something called the CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, and I can't remember exactly what it stands for, but CRISPR / Cas, C-A-S-9, gene editing technique. And what this is bringing on the horizon is the possibility that we could not just go and change some gene in somebody that creates a defect in their, you know, some abnormality or something, but that you can edit the germline. And the human germline is our genes in either sperms or eggs of the female or embryos. And if you would be able to change those, then the possibility, these are the genes that are inherited and passed on to future generations. And the idea here is that if that were possible, you might be able to be on the verge of having designer babies and even designer families, which raises all kinds of ethical questions, you know, about whether this is a good idea or not. And
sure.
So some people think there should be a temporary moratorium on this, you know, till we know more about it, and other people want to push forward, you know. And so, you know, the idea, I think the latest thing I just read a couple of days ago is that somebody may have figured out it's possible to use this CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing thing to possibly go in and eliminate HIV/AIDS from somebody's DNA, which would be amazing if that were true, you know.
Absolutely,
so stuff, the thing about all of this is it's moving very fast. And, you know, trying to keep up with it all is like a little crazy, even in one of these areas, let alone all of them. And, you know, but one of the ethical questions, I mean, there, you know, the idea of, you know, eugenics or trying to create the, you know, the perfect human, you know, like you, if you could actually affect your offspring, you know, the genes of your offspring, I mean, would everybody have want to be handsome and beautiful and gifted and intelligent and athletic and blah, 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 all together? I mean, or would only certain people have the money to pay for such technology and then create a new genetic elite? You know, I mean, there's a huge number of really enormous issues in all of this. And, yeah, so that's another thing happening today. How much time do we have left?
just under 3 minutes.
Okay, well, let me quickly. There's also questions on the Internet where it's going. And, you know, like Ray Kurzweil had this view that humans are going to become obsolete in the future and want to upload their consciousness in a computer chip. But another friend of mine, Jan Amkreutz, A-M-K-R-E-U-T-Z, wrote a book called Digital Spirit, Minding the Future. And his idea was that because so much, there's such an explosion of ideas and information now all on the Internet, and everybody goes on the Internet, connects to all these other things, so you're creating like a neural network of the emerging global brain. You know, this is an idea people have, that the Internet is like an externalized global brain of humanity, where everybody can put their ideas out there, link them to other people's ideas, creating like a neural network. And the other thing is that you can very quickly get ideas and information, and so it can spur your own creativity and innovation. So it could lead, you know, his idea was it would lead to a whole new generation of creative ideas and so on for humanity, which is a quite different view. People are also talking about the Internet of Things and the Internet of Everything and the Age of Network Matter. These are different terms for the idea that everything's going to become smart technology now, and that you're going to have wearable technology in your body and in your environment, and it won't all be very obvious, but it will be there and everything will get linked up, you know. And so that's something people are talking about, which raises a whole lot of issues too. And then Elon Musk, who also has SpaceX and, you know, the Tesla car and so on, he also is supporting the idea that we should go to space and go to Mars. And different people say we should go to space. This is another technology, because you need computers, telecommunications, robotics, et cetera, to go to space. You also need a propulsion system, you know, rockets and so on to get there. And
right.
Elon Musk's big thing is that we could have a better chance to get to space if we could create reusable rockets, you know, because up until now, recently, you know, rockets all self-destruct, which is very costly. So he's now actually landed a rocket that went up back down on a platform on the ocean and had it land space, you know, vertically upright without falling over. So this is a big thing. And then Amazon, you know, Bezos is also working on this kind of stuff. So, but, you know, the idea, I mean, there's different views of people about why we should go to space. You know, this is sort of my last area to cover here because we're going to be out of time.
You know what? Unfortunately, yeah, Linda, what?
Yeah.
Next episode. because we are about 10 seconds left in tonight's episode, okay?
Okay. So going to space is another thing. The human spirit likes to explore the unknown, but we'll have to talk about it in the next another time.
That's right. Well, Linda, we're going to have you back on the show on Tuesday, May 31st. That's next Tuesday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, for part four of our extended 12-part series. And as always, Linda, it was a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks so much. I enjoy it. Thank you.
All right. Well, take care. Have a great night. And we'll see you next week. And from everyone here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying thanks for listening. And have a great night, guys. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.